What is it that we want out of life? What sort of thing would make us all very happy if we had it out of life? Well, whatever we want, that's what we should start giving. If we want peace in our home, then let us be peaceful. If we want joy in our home, then let us be joyful. If we want harmony in our house, let us be harmonious. We have to set the cause in motion. We have to set the picture in motion. We have to do it by ourselves. Right, Lily? We have to do it by ourselves because we want to love unconditionally where we love because it's who we are. And then that's what we'll get back. Now, everybody in this world thinks that other people should do what they want them to do. Everybody in this world thinks that other people are the cause of their problems. If she makes me unhappy, he makes me mad, he does this, he does that, she does that. Well, there's a father who had a boys' town in the United States, and boys who ran away from home or who were orphans or so forth had nobody to take care of them. He had Father Flanagan's boys' home. And one evening, he went out on his front porch and he saw this young boy coming along carrying another young boy, carrying another one. And he said to the young boy, "Come, let me help you with him. Let me carry him." And the young boy said, "Father, he's not heavy. He's my brother." Now you see, this is love beyond anything we could ever imagine. Love beyond anything we could ever conceive. It is unconditional love. He's just giving love. Now, do you think he has a fight with his brother occasionally? Sure. Do you think he disagrees with his brother occasionally? Sure. Do you think he hates his brother's guts sometimes? Sure. Sure, there are all sorts of times where he's going through normal cycles, but does he unconditionally love his brother? Would he stand up for his brother under all circumstances, even if his brother was wrong? Would he stand up for him? Yes, because that's called brotherly love. That's called loving someone unconditionally. Now, do you stand up for your father and mother when the community says that they're doing something bad? That they're not sending you to church like they should. they're not giving you nice clothes to wear. They're not doing this or that. Do you stand up for your parents? You say, "Hey, they do the best they can. They do the best they know. And they're good. They're wonderful." And you see, when that's the case, then everything is in divine order. We never need to have unhappiness or inharmony with our family. We never need to have that. We never need to have anything that makes our life ugly or not happy. Now, why do we do it? Why do we do it? Why do we do it? Now, Seville, Mrs. Agabua, the head of the what's the name of that organization? God Unlimited, Church of God Unlimited Activity, University of Healing, down in Nigeria, in Owerri. Now, why does she go around helping other people in the community who want to learn the teaching? Why does she help them? Do they pay her lots of money so that she'll help them? Do they say nice things about her, or do they say bad things about her sometimes? Do they give her a hard time, or are they always supportive of her at all times? It doesn't matter to Seville. She is always Seville. Right? She's always a beautiful lady. Right?
Right.
Right. That's right out of mouths of babes here. She is always being herself. Now, many people will disagree with her. Now, she's been teaching the people to do the coursework in the university, to do the lessons and do these things, and they don't, blah, blah, blah. They argue with her and they give her a hard time, and she says, that's okay. She says, I understand you're arguing. I understand you're giving me a hard time because I gave myself a hard time in the beginning too, you know. But, hey, the more she taught them, just say, I like me, I like me, I like me. The more she taught them to say, I like me, the more they said, I like me. And pretty soon, they stopped fighting Dr. Agabwa, and they started coming to her and saying, how can I do better? They stopped fighting her and saying, you don't know nothing, you know. You don't know nothing because, you know, you're just in this couple of years. You know, you don't know anything. But she does. And as she did it, she brought them wonderfully and perfectly into the fold because they loved what she did for them. She did not judge them. She just worked with them in a perfect and beautiful way. Now, why does she do that? Who's paying her to do that? She is doing what Bill Gates did. Bill Gates did what turned him on. And he did it very well. He just loved it. And as he loved doing what turned him on, he became rich. As he loved doing what turned him on, Bill Gates is now going around the world spending last year, was it $8 billion? Billion dollars for the health centers of various countries. Billions of dollars. Now, he could never have dreamed he would be working in that area after working in a so commercial an area as he had been before. Now, Sibyl cannot imagine what she's going to do as she goes out and continues to open the doorway for people in their thinking. As she continues to open the doorway for people in the understanding of who and what they are, of knowing that they are the magnificent, completely fantastic people. Because Sibyl, when people say to her, oh, dear, I tried treatment, that doesn't work. She says, now let's just sit quietly now. She doesn't say treatment works. She says, let's sit quietly now. Let's just say, I like me, 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 I like me. And she'll rub their back maybe, and maybe she'll rub their shoulder and say, I like me. And then they'll say, are you coming on to me? Are you trying to make time with me here? And she says, I sure am. I'm coming on to you with unconditional love because I know when you start saying, I like me, you're going to love yourself so much that you're going to be a super success in anything you do. You're going to be whole and perfect, and your whole family's going to be whole and perfect. You're going to have every desire of your heart fulfilled once you love yourself, once you like yourself. When you say, I like me, I like me, I like me, then everything you're dreaming of, everything, because what? Anyone got the answer? What reason? What have you done? What have you changed in your attitude that it makes this happen? You stopped fighting. You stopped fighting. I have so many people who write to the prayer ministry and I work with them, and as they write to the prayer ministry, they say, I've done this and I've done that, and I've done this and I've done that, and I've gone to Unity, and I've gone to Religious Science, and I've gone to God Unlimited, and I've gone to the psychologists, and I've gone on the internet. I've gone everywhere. And so I just say to them, hey, all of that's very good. Now, do me a favor. Go in here. Go right inside yourself and say, I like me. Now, forget you need money. Forget you need a job. Forget your health is bad. Forget all these things. And just say, I like me. Breathe deep, let it all out. Say, I like me, I like me, I like me. And when you do that, then your body, which was doing what you told it to do, not like itself, is going to say, oh, you changed your mind, huh? You got a different point of view here. Okay. Okay. You stop fighting your good. You stop telling your good you don't want it. You stop telling the good to get out of town and don't leave any tracks so you can follow it. You start saying, I like me. I am the pure white light of love. I am whole and perfect. I am fantastic. And when you say these things, what happens to you? When you say these things, these are the things that happen in your life. These are the things that take place in your experiences. These are the things that are your reality. Now, Seville, she sits here so smug and thinking, yeah, I travel the world and I do all these things and I just have a good time and I'm doing just fine, you know. And there's something gnawing away inside of Seville. And that thing that's gnawing away inside of Seville is this thing that says there are a couple of million more people I haven't told I like me to them so they could like themselves. Now, I'm going to do it one by one, and I'm in no rush. I have an eternity to live teaching Chioma. Say, I like me, I like me, I like me, I like me. Say, I like me, say, I like me, I like me. You see, one at a time. And she doesn't care. And then you'll say, well, I need some money, I've got this problem. I'm not going to give you any money. I'm going to teach you to say, I like me. And when you say, I like me, then you are going to find miracles happening in your life where all of your needs will be met, where all your desires will be fulfilled. You have a health problem. Okay, you got a health problem. That's because you haven't got a health solution. Now, she's going to give them a health solution. When you like yourself, your body says, ah, that's good, you know. It tickles and it giggles and it laughs and it's joyful. But if your body isn't doing that, what's it doing? If your body isn't doing that, your body is doing one thing. Your body is acting just the way you think it's acting. Ah, I hurt. Oh. And your body is doing it just the way you think it's doing. Now, you say, I want to be whole and perfect. I don't want to be ill. I don't want to be ill. Well, you're looking at the appearances and you're saying that's your reality. You look at a broken leg. That's a broken leg forever and ever and ever and ever and ever. No, it isn't. It only takes so long to heal. Well, why does it take so long to heal? Because you name it and claim it. Now, is that leg whole and perfect already? Is that leg in the ideal state whole and perfect? Well, then say the same thing about your cancer, or your kidneys, or your eyes, or your ears, or your whatever things might come up in your life, or money, or friends, or whatever. Look at it as a loving, positive attitude, and that is your experience. It cannot happen to you so long as you hang on to the old. Now, I bought a course from Great Courses, Great Books, and not Great Books, but it's about Great Books. And this, the professors, the top professors of all the universities in the United States were checked on to see which professor had the best residual information by the students, that they loved that professor, they loved his teaching, they loved his course, they thought he was just a super, 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 and she and he. And so they went over all over the world, basically the United States, and they got these professors, these top professors, to put on a series of courses, anywhere from 30 to 60 lectures on their topic. And I bought two of them. One is on nutrition, and the other is on the world's great philosophers, you know, something like that. Just terrific. And I'm listening to them and hearing them. Well, all of these world great philosophers were very fascinating people. And what these world philosophers did was they weren't interested in making money. They were just interested in living what they believed. And they stood up for what they believed, no matter what came after them. You remember the story about Socrates taking the hemlock and dying and so forth, because the people lied about him. The people said that he taught them to go against the Senate and go against the politics. And he didn't. He said, think about what they're saying and then make your own judgment. But, you know, like, don't just blindly go after something because that's what somebody else said. And so they challenged him on this. And rather than admit to doing something he didn't do, he said, that's just not true. They ordered him to take the hemlock and die. And he did. Now, the story isn't like I'm telling it. That's the story that most of us know. But the story that this teacher gives in his lecture series tells a whole different story about Socrates. That he was a man of character in every way, and that he did teach these boys these things to think, but he didn't teach them to go contrary. And when he was dying and his body was just about cold because he took the poison, he said to his right-hand person, he said, oh, don't forget to pay the tax to the healing organization. Because he owed that yet, because they had worked with him, you know. I mean, here, all he was doing was, everything was to do it right. And he said, if I leave the country and just run away from it, I'll be admitting it. I'll be admitting that I did it. And he says, I can't admit that sort of thing. That's not me. That's not my nature. But now, when you hear it, from how this fellow tells it in these half-hour lectures, it is so beautifully done. You listen to how he speaks about the philosophers and how he speaks about these people and how he speaks about how they work, and they are just fantastic. They're utterly amazing. But it's deep, but good. And I'm going to give you copies of that. If you want it, you can hear it. And they're really wonderful and beautifully articulately said. And then there was another tape there, another one that I bought two of them, and this was on nutrition. And this woman is 30 years in nutrition, you know, she's well qualified, and her job is nutritional advisor to the Houston sports team, whoever it is, a Houston sports team, a big sports team, money, big. And so she is giving from her everyday experiences activities in this lecture on what foods we should have, the minerals that we're needed, the roughage that you need, and the proteins that you need, and all the other things. And she says, it's not what you think it is. It's not what you think it is. But it's so beautifully done. Now, did she ever think she was going to be doing something like that? Did she ever think that she was going to be the best nutritional speaker on the college level of education? No. She just gave of herself, and you'll hear it as she speaks to you. She gave herself so beautifully, so wonderfully, so fantastically that everybody follows what she says, and they don't fight it. She doesn't say, no, you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do this. She says, if you do this, this is the result. You know, if you do this, this is the result. She doesn't say, no, some people say you should do this, and some people say you shouldn't, and some people say this. She says, these are the things to follow. You know, you make up your own mind. You make up your own mind what you want to do. There are many people in this world who want to be skinny, and they go on these crazy diets, and the diets work for them. They're skinny. But as she points out, all of the muscle in their body is gone and replaced by fat, and they keep having to fight the fat off because it keeps coming back. They haven't really gotten to the basic concern of how to handle it, the real solution. And so she gives in these talks some of the really tremendous solutions that are fantastic. Now, I'm letting some of our campus family hear it, and as they hear it, some of them are making, oh yeah, you know. I said, hush, hush. Number one, this woman knows what she's talking about. Number two, I don't care one tiny bit if you follow what she says. All I care about is what?
Be yourself and have fun.
What?
Being yourself and having fun.
No, listen.
Okay.
Yeah, be yourself and have fun, but listen. Listen to the great teachers. Listen to the philosophers. Listen to the wise. And then do what you damn please. But listen to them. These are intelligent people, and they're not intelligent because they're stupid, because they didn't have a good background. They're wise because they have knowledge. Now, listen to their knowledge, and then go do as you wish. Then go do as you wish. No one will... someone said something the other day, and... I said, now here are my talks that are on here, you can use it on here, and I've gone through a lot of bother, I'm leaving town, and I was taking precious time to put this on here for you, so they said, well, I'm trying to put it onto the computer, I'm trying to get it on the computer, it's on, you put it on the computer, I'm trying to get it to work on the computer, and I said, now look, all you have to do is say, Herb, that was so nice of you to put it on this iPod. I can get it off there very easily, but I still want to make this work on here. That's okay. But it's so nice. I went to a lot of bother for that. The teacher went to a lot of bother. The least you could do is listen. The least you could do is say, okay, I'll try it. You know, but... And if I haven't got it working on the computer the way I want it to, then I can use it from there. But you see what I'm saying? Now, what does the teacher say after a while of hearing these kind of remarks, where the teacher gives this information, gives this, the details from excellent sources, and then you sit back and you say, that's not the way I learned it. That's not the way I've gone to school. That's not the latest thing that I've heard on the internet. I've gone through all these pill factories that are on there, you know, and figured out what's going on. You see, when you begin listening to your own heart, then you'll find out that why was Hippocrates the father of medicine back in 600 B.C.? 600 B.C., they had never done any checking into the body. They'd never seen how the body functions. They didn't know how the liver functioned. They didn't know how the heart functioned. They didn't know how all the things functioned in the body. But they did. They did. And what they said about how it functioned is being looked at now by the scientific community, and they're saying, hey, it works. We didn't believe it worked because we didn't believe it worked. I mean, how could Hippocrates know that 600 B.C.? You know, they didn't have any experience. But there were the natural herbs. There were the things of the garden. There were the witches and the mothers and people who knew these things. You take a tribe of Africans living in the desert, and They didn't have much, but they ate what they ate. And then one of them got sick. And so the witch doctor or whatever went to them, found out what it was. And then the witch doctor said, doing their dance and so forth, which is the same thing as saying intuitively. And then they came into the sick person and they told them, I'll be back. And they went out into the woods and they picked a mushroom. And they knew just the right mushroom to pick. They'd never used the mushroom before. And they brought it in and prepared it, however they prepared it. Probably sauteed it or something. And then they fed it to this person. Tuck! Like that. Tuck! They were completely healed. Well, now, irrationally, other people tried using it for other purposes than themselves, and they died. Because intuitively, they had not tuned in what was best for them. And their body was an antithesis to this healing activity that it was for one person, and it wasn't for another. Now, it could be for everybody. Maybe it had to be boiled first or something, you know. Maybe a few other things had to be done. But intuitively they knew. Intuitively they knew. And this is what Sybil is doing intuitively. She's going around working with all of her friends and all of her neighbors and all of the people in her family. And she's saying to them, you know, you're fantastic. You're glorious. And she's got that stupid looking smile on her face that looks like she's so self-satisfied. Well, sure, she's self-satisfied. Because she's not trying to prove anything to anybody. She's just being herself and having fun. And you look at that smile and you say, eh, you know it all, you know it all. And she says, I would like to think I do, but I'm working on it. You know, I'm listening within, you know. And she is using her intuitive sense to know. And it works. She's using that intuitive sense and she is listening and she's learning. And each of you are doing the same thing. Christy goes in, and many times she has gone into patients and withdrawn things that were given to them and accidentally had them disappear so that the patient wouldn't have it, because she felt that they were not going to be blessed by that at that moment. At that moment! Maybe overall it was good, but at that moment, there was something in the patient's consciousness, in the patient's attitude, in the patient's physiognomy, physiology, all of those things that were making that patient not right for that. And intuitively, this is why she makes such an excellent nurse. She knows intuitively, she listens intuitively, she acts intuitively. Yes, Mabel, and you, with your students, you go to them and you try to encourage them to learn, and they won't learn. And what happens? You blow your stack at them. No, you cool down. You cool down and you intuitively psych the kid out mentally in yourself. You intuitively think, I wonder what's keeping him from getting the point here, getting the lesson. And as you listen intuitively, you're like Hippocrates. Give nothing to the patient that you wouldn't first take yourself, and never kill a patient. Well, the doctors have forgotten that. But they give these things to the patients, and that's just a whatever. But when you work with your students, you are more intuitive and in tune with them than you really know. Because you think sometimes you're not using good wisdom. Sometimes you just need a good paddle on the behind, you know, and get them settled back and being, you know, facing the fact that you're the teacher and they're the student and they better shut up and listen, you know. And you don't do that. You just bite your tongue and then you talk to them and you say, now, what seems to be the problem here? What seems to be the problem here? Yeah, and they don't want to talk to you. You see, what seems to be the problem? You know, you're a very brilliant person, boy or girl. You're a very brilliant person. You're very intelligent. I have seen you do things that other students, you know, stress over, but you do it so easily. Now, what seems to be the problem? Is there something I can do to help you? Yeah. And yeah, it takes a moment. But patiently, intuitively, lovingly, you persist. And it may take you 2 or 3 minutes. And I'm not kidding you. If you are really sincere, it may take you 2 or 3 minutes. And you get right to the foundation of it, right to the basis of it. You know, I've been watching The Dog Whisperer. And The Dog Whisperer is on the National Geographic television and so forth. And The Dog Whisperer is called into people's homes, but he does not allow the people to tell him ahead of time what the problem is. You understand? And he goes into their home, and he doesn't want to see the dog. He wants to see the people. So he sits with the people and says, "Now, how can I help you?" And so the people give him their laundry list of problems with the dog. And he instantly knows exactly what level of awareness they are not doing with their dog. He instantly knows where they are losing touch with reality with their dog. Now, how does he know? Intuitively. He psychs them out. He listens to them. He hears the tone of their voice. "Well, that damn dog, he never does what I tell him." And so, now, what is it that the people are doing? The people are treating the dog like a human being. That's the first problem. And the second problem is that people are treating the dog like it's in charge of the household. It's in charge of everything. So Caesar says, "Okay, may I?" And so he goes and sees the dog. And he talks to the dog. And he doesn't say anything. He just walks in. But he walks in like this. Chin up, chest out, shoulders back. And he walks in. He walks up to the dog. The dog might be snarling and biting and everything. He walks up to the dog. And the dog backs away. This guy is the master, the dominant one. He is the pack master. And he walks in, the dog backs away. And then, if the dog has a bone, he'll walk over to the bone. And he'll step on the bone, and the dog must walk away. Because he is claiming all the space. He's telling the dog who is the master. He's telling the dog who is the master. And the dog instantly says, "Oh, okay. Okay, you're the boss. He comes into that house, it's not his house, and he starts claiming the territory that the dog had claimed and owned, and the people didn't stop him, and nothing stopped him, but he did that. Well, he had complete control of the dog, complete control. Then he said to the people, "You know, the first thing you have to do is take the dog for a walk. 40 minutes to 60 minutes every day, take him for a walk. But you take him for a walk on a leash. And you put the leash up high on their throat, not down here, but high. And then you walk the dog so that the dog walks head on your knee. You know. And then if the dog pulls away or anything, you just pull up on that, on his throat. And he stops it. He stops it. He'll walk perfectly with you. And then the dog begins to understand you are the master. And when the dog understands you are the master, it will do anything you ask him to do. Then he sits down and the dog comes up and cuddles him, snuggles him, kisses him after he's been dominant with him. He'll take his hand and he'll go like this, you know, like a bite, like a dog bite when the dog's not behaving. You know, do that. And the dog realizes that this is what the mother would do, the mother dog would do. That's the master. So, now, What has this got to do with you? You may or may not have a dog. You may not care about that. What does that have to do with you? If you can be master of a dog merely by learning how to work with the dog, you can be master of your problems merely by learning how to work with them, working with them as solutions. And when you work with your problems as solutions, then you will do like the great philosophers did. They work with problems as solutions and they solve them. And as they solve them, great and wonderful things happen to and for them. Great and miracles happened in their life. They didn't have a Mr. Candle, and they didn't have Mr. Sandman. They did, but they perhaps weren't listening, because you can be sure in those days, every tent, every house had candles in it. That's all they had. Lamps or candles, but a flaming light. And did the children know about Mr. Candle? Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Did the children study the candle flame and see Mr. Candle dancing in the candle flame? Have you ever looked at a glowing fire and watched it burn and seen magic in there? You didn't know. Something said, oh, oh, ooh, ooh. You just feel so good, you know. And why? Because you were learning to be intuitive. You were learning to be sensitive to yourself. You're learning to be unconditionally loving. You're learning to find good in everything. And as you learn to find good in everything, what happens? As you learn to find good in everything, it happens to you. It comes to you. But are your thoughts worth as much attention as the dog is to Caesar? I would think so. Our thoughts are quite important. Are your thoughts going to be what you want them to be? Where did this phrase come from? Man, know thyself. Yeah. Ancient, before 600 BC, before 1200, way, way back. Man, know thyself. Now, philosophers have been having these beautiful thoughts long, long. Now, do most of the people on earth have happy lives? Yes. Out of all the people on earth, about 99% of them have happy lives. You say, well, there's an awful lot of unhappy people. Yes. How many millions of people are on earth, or billions? There's maybe 7.6 billion people on earth, somewhere around there. So, if you take 1% of that, what will that give you? Lots of millions. Lots of millions. Let's say 100 million people or better, you know. That's a lot of people. Now, you add up all the convicts and all the criminals and all the people who are bad on earth. You add up all the people who are in the hospitals. You add up all the people who are unhappy and can't pay their rent and so forth. Just them. And you'll find that only adds up to a couple hundred million people. 99% are not experiencing that. 99% of the world are happy. 99% of the world do not know poverty, do not know illness, do not know sickness, do not know lack. Yeah, those that do put on a big show. But what are they doing? What are they doing? They know better. They know better. But sometimes they don't let them off the hook. And traditionally it says they must do things in a certain way. And they continue to do it in a certain way. And because they continue to do it in a certain way, what happens? They die. They continue to do it in a certain way, and their family dies. They continue to use the pond out behind the house where you have drained the sewage just to go swimming in, you know. And now, the kids weren't dying. The kids weren't dying. They had immune built into them, so powerful. But the world, WHO came along, the World Health Association or organization, and they said, let's clean up that pothole, that bad hole. Let's immunize all the kids. Let's give them shots so that they'll be taken care of. And they all died. They all died. Now, what was that intuitive? That's stupid, wasn't it? Now, what were they doing? They were not looking at conditions the way they were. All the mother had to do was say, you're okay, go play. When the kid came in with a scratched knee and blood running all over the place. Yeah, wipe it off, go play. Take the whole shooing and go and play. And the kid's perfect. But if the mother says, oh dear, we gotta go to the doctor, gotta get shots, we gotta go do this, we gotta do that, gotta get, and she puts so much worry into them. So much worry into them. And that worry kills them. She kills her own children. And would she knowingly kill her own children? Yes. Because she knows she shouldn't worry. She knows that worrying is not right. Worrying is not something we do. If we worry, we are going against principle. Principle says to whatever you think about, it is done unto you. Whatever you think about, it's done unto you. Now, what are you going to think about? Are you going to think about the limitations? Now, when Mabel goes into her class, does she expect the class are going to be all obstreperous? They're all going to be a bunch of little rattlesnakes? No. She goes into her class and she says, I got something new for you guys today. Oh, I'm so excited about it, you know. Did you know that in your brain there are 10,000 stem cells born every day and those stem cells are just waiting to be told what to do? Did you know that? And the class says, oh, come on now. We saw that on video. We saw that on the internet. But it's true. Now, did you think about it? You heard it. You saw it. Now, what are you going to do about it? You're just going to let it go by the way? Or are you going to use it? You're going to put it in work? I've been going around giving lectures on the stem cells for a couple of years, very heavily. And the majority of the people that I gave the lectures to told me after a while, why don't you cover something else? Why don't you talk about something else? You know? And I said, okay. So I did. I don't care. But the thing, they hadn't learned the lesson yet. They hadn't learned the lesson of these stem cells and how they could use them and how they could benefit from them. For how many thousands of years have we had philosophers teaching us these things? For how many thousands of years have we had people giving us information that could make our life richer and more, better and more beautiful? How many thousands of years? And what have we done about it? We've poo-pooed them. We've turned them off. We have judged them. And we said, oh, look at that. Look at that. President of the Bank of Switzerland. And he's an embezzler. We believed in him. He's the some other big mucky buck in the finances, you know, and he's an embezzler. He did this, he did that, he did misuse funds and stuff like that. Hey, some people in this world are wise. They go to jail, and their hands are slapped, and they said, don't do that again. They come out of jail. Are they poor? Who hires them? The major companies hire them so that they can tell the major companies how to avoid having that done to them. Because they've been up the creek. They've been down the creek. They know how it's to be handled. And they're hired. They're hired. Now, when they're naughty and they are doing bad stock things, they are told they cannot act in stock any longer for a period of years, maybe 10 years or so. They cannot. Well, how stupid. They should let them act because now perhaps they're going to want to act in an honest way, and in acting in an honest way, what's going to happen? They're going to teach others how to do the same thing and how to benefit from it. You see, we put in jail the very people who could oftentimes be instructive in helping us to do something beneficial. Watch them, you know, attend to them. You have a right to do that, but don't stop them. Get them going on doing their things in a beneficial way. Say, turn it around and start doing things beneficial. Turn it around instead of warehousing bodies. You know, isn't that something? Now, the Russians, they use prisoners to do hard labor. How stupid. Here, these men are brilliant geniuses. They should turn that around and let the people who are not brilliant geniuses who want to do the hard labor, let them do it. You know? They'll do it. They like the job. They don't mind. But think about this for yourself. How many times have you violated the law? Now, just such a simple thing as driving over the speed limit. How many times do you drive over the speed limit and knowingly drive over the speed limit and get mad at somebody else because they're driving over the speed limit under what you're driving? And so you try to pass them and you try to do it. Now, that is terrible. That is just absolutely without remorse to it. That's just terrible. But now, why is it terrible? Because principle is principle. And if you train yourself, I mean, you try to say you're training your kids and you're training your students and you're training whoever in your world to follow principle. You say to your nurses, this is the principle. This is what we do. This is the principle. This is the principle. And you sometimes jump ship on the principle yourself and you don't follow it because you know something has to be done in a certain way because intuitively you know it has to be done. But you don't want to give them permission to intuitively do things because you don't know how their intuition is. So you jump on them for principle, and you make sure that they follow the rules of the hospital. And you, in teaching your classes in school, you make sure that every one of your students follows the technique that you have to give them to learn mathematics, to learn English, to learn other things, you know. And in your activities in the law, what are you doing? What are you doing? You're dealing with people and you're looking for the honesty within them, right? Right. And so, now, Mabel, did you notice what he just did?
Sorry?
Is he aware, don't think?
You know what he just did?
Who did?
He! I said, you look for the honesty in people. And he says, oh, is that ready? I thought you said that at 1 o'clock you wanted to quit.
No, 12 o'clock.
Oh, that's fine. Okay, fine. I could go on. But no, I said to him that you look for the honesty in your clients. And he laughed. That's kind of tough to look for the honesty when all they want to do is get off from being caught from having done something, you know. Or maybe they didn't. But anyhow, we have to presume they did do it because they were caught, you know. And whether they really did or not, it's them. I tell you, I've told you the story about the mother. The boy came in the house and the mother says, son, did you steal Tommy's bike? And he said, no. And she says, well, Tommy's mother said she saw you go off with his bike. And I didn't, Mom, no. And they checked and checked, and finally the police found there's another kid who looked just like him who had taken the bike. And he did not really think, but it was guilty by association, guilty by looking like it, you know. And all reason would say, he's guilty, he's guilty, he's guilty. But you see, the mother believed in her son who said, no, I didn't do it, because of his intrinsic honesty. And she followed through. And the real crook was found. We shall continue more of these wonderful talks as the days go by. And I want to say to all of you one thing. You have the opportunity to put the principle in motion. You have the opportunity to be faultlessly honest, never lying, never making a fib, never picking up anything that doesn't belong to you, even if it's a $1,000 note laying in the city street. You don't pick it up, even if it doesn't belong to you. There's nobody around. It blew in the wind. There's nobody around for 100 miles. But it's not yours. It's not yours. See, could you be strong enough not to pick it up? Could you be strong enough not to take it when you know it's not yours, and if you pick it up, you're going to get a kick in the... and it's going to really hurt. Because, sure, you may have found the money, but you're going to find some unhappiness going to happen to you because you violated the principle which said, never touch anything that doesn't belong to you. You don't even take it to the police department. Don't touch it. Don't create it. Don't see it. Don't ever have anything in your life that doesn't belong to you, because if you do, you'll pay for it. You'll pay big. But always follow the rules. Live the rules. Believe them. And you're okay. And whether you know it or not, I like me, I like me, I like me. And I love you. I love you.
I love you.